Today's daf is daf Mem Beit, and we're holding on the bottom of Mem Aleph Amud Beit, one line up from the bottom. Ahudi Amalei Lechavri, Havli Shit Me'azuzi, the Masik Me'becha. So a man tells a friend, what about that $600 loan I made you? Oh, Marley. So he says to him, wait a second. V'lav Paraticha Me'a Kabe Avtzi, have I not already paid you back the full amount by giving you now 100 containers of afatzim. Afatzim is usually translated as gallnuts. And these were very, very useful for working on skins to make them ready to write Sefer Torah and so on. And the price of those gallnuts at the time that I gave them to you were the kaimei b'shita shita. They were worth at the time $6 per package, and that was the fair market value, and I gave you 100 packages. The last I heard, 6 times 100 equals 600. So that were even Stephen. Omar Lay, so he said to him, I beg your pardon, I do remember that you gave me 100, however, at the time, Lav bi'arba arba ave kaime, was it not that the price at the time was $4 per barrel, which per package, which means that you owe me an additional $200 now? Dollars.
So Usher Trey Sahadi, two witnesses come and they say, indeed it was $200 short. This guy only paid when the market rate, I mean, we don't know what he paid, we have no idea about anything else, but we do know, we can tell you professionally, that the market on that day that they claim was indeed $4 a bushel. So, I mean, so the guy says, all right, see, I'm right. Now, Lamaita, in this case, we would think that it's got something to do with the same issue that we had before. And yet, Omar Rava Huchzak Kafran, Rava himself, who is the one that says yesterday, that something that a person is not concentrating on is not something that he's going to remember. This guy isn't claiming that he only paid him with gallnuts. He remembered he paid him, and he remembered the transaction, and he remembered it was 100 bushels. He's not sure, but maybe there was extra money I gave him. From what I recall, it was $6 a bushel at the time. So you might think that according to Rava, this is one of those cases. And yet Rava says, in this case, he can't be nishba. He's already shown his true colors. He's lying about this loan. Well, Marami Bar Chama. But you're the one who says, why now are you saying that this guy was supposed to remember precisely what the market value was on a particular day? Amalei Rava says, Rava, look, that's because Ksuta Detira Mitka Dechiri Kimshi. Something like that, a person has to do with a certain commodity. To say that he doesn't remember the price of that commodity is not Milsdur Amelinch. It was the case of the Amud, the guy thought he never passed by there, he's supposed to remember every place he stopped in his life. But this type of thing is a thing that people do remember. The guy comes, and he's being told they are alone with the shtar, everything is in order. And the guy says to him, well, that's all very nice, but you know for Atifa, you know that I paid you. Or Marley, paid me. You mean that money? Honestly, Troy, you knew that money wasn't for this loan. You know that you owed me a loan that was a verbal loan. And obviously, the first money that you took, I mean, that went to paying up the verbal loan. I was going to give you the shtar. I didn't give you the shtar back either, you see. So, I want my money now for this loan. So, in other words, he's admitting that there was a payment. Omer Nachman Isra Shtar. This shtar is now in a tough position. It's got a reis in it because the holder of the shtar is moda that the person has paid money. Now he's only claiming that, well, there was some other loan. You see, in other words, you're admitting that this guy paid money. Now you're in the position of proving that there was another loan that he paid money for, but which you don't have a contract. So there's something wrong with your shtar. In this case, he can't taina that it was sitroi. Sitroi means from the side. That was a side issue. I wasn't taking money on this loan. Now, there's many different shitas as to what the level of Yisra Shtar over here is. I mean, Rashi says, lav kol kamine lomar sitroi. You know, he cannot bring that taina up at all. If he's motivated that there was piro, then he can't use this shtar. Rabbi Natan taina, and the Mashmosis from the Rabbi Nachmanel as well, that it only means Yisra Shtara in terms of requiring a Shvua, like we said yesterday, the equivalent of Pegeh Shtara. It could only be a Nishba Benotel in that case, together with the Shtar. And there's other levels. The Tosis himself suggests that Shtara Regia is considered to be a valid Shtar in the sense that we don't tear it up, but we can't use it without further evidence. And if we could find out that indeed there was another loan, then we can put two and two together and say, okay, fine, so we'll be Mechayev him to pay. Now, we have a similar case that involves us in a curious change of heart of Rav Papa, because Rav Papa, about this case, says no. Loan is a Shtar. There's no Reyesa in this Shtar. So, ask the Gemara, but Rav Papa himself talked about another case. Maishna mi'ahudi amle lechavre. There was a case where somebody says to a guy, Havli me'ezuzit basik b'chava ha'shtara. Here's the IOU I've got, and it's for $100, I want my money. Omar Lay, so he says to him, what? Lava Turiya Haftali, you gave me that money, as you know perfectly well, to invest in buying a shor that we were then going to shecht and make some money off of. V'yatita v'yabta amatzakva v'kibalta zuscha. You came, I understand, I bought that shor. You were at the counter, you took the money off the counter. So how can you possibly come now and finally you want your money? Omar Lay, and the guy says, all very true. But you also know that you owed me money for something else. The money that I took off the counter, I took for the older debt, which is why I'm still holding the star. So I want my money. That sounds like exactly the same case. And in that case, it was Rav Papa himself who said, Yisra Shtara. Now, how is it that in the first case, he argues, Lo Yisra Shtara, with the sign of Sitroi, that this money was for some other purpose, which I was taking advantage of. Now I'm going to collect that first. Pretty standard. Somebody's got a star, somebody's got money that doesn't have a backing of a star. First money in, he says, that handles my previous debt. It's like those credit cards that they give you, you know, the free, there's no charge for interest on the transfer, the balance, you know. And then you make the foolish mistake of putting on a $10 bill onto your credit card. Problem is, you never pay the $10 bill, because anything that you're paying to the part that you're not paying on interest. $10 you'll pay interest for the next 15 years, you understand? So he says, of course the money I took was for the money that I wanted to apply it to, not the money that you wanted me to apply it to. Says the Gemara, because it's a big difference. So the whole story didn't appear in the first case. Over here, the guy is motive to the context of the shtar. He's saying, yes, indeed, we did make that deal about the buying the ashar. And yes, I did go over to the counter and take the money off the counter. But my intent in taking that money was to pay off an older debt. Oh, now wait a minute. In the previous case, he's saying, this loan had nothing to do with that loan. This was just that I was taking money because you're offering money and I'm applying it to things you're paying back. But over here, he's agreeing that the whole context of the loan and the repayment was all in terms of the shor that they had, and he's admitting this, the shor that they had agreed to buy out of this contract money? No. Then, of course, it's a reyes of the shtar. This guy is being motivated that there's a problem here. So answers Rav Papa, and that answers Rav Papa. In that case, and everybody's agreed on that. There, itra shtara. Whereas hafa, over here, what's so unusual to say that a person is holding money for various debts, and that he took the money and fine. So that means because we saw him once take money, that that's the only money that the guy could have owed him. My hobby, Allah. So what's the bottom line, la halacha, on this? Rav Papi Amar lo itra shtara. Rav Sheshit Breder of Aidi Amar itra shtara. The Hilchot itra shtara in both of these cases. However, there's a few caveats here, because we've got to make sure we understand the situation. Hani mile de pare ba'apisahade. It's only if the payment over here was in front of witnesses, velo itkile shtar, and the guy never made any mention of the shtar that supposedly he was paying up. But suppose, because otherwise if he made a mention, then the witnesses will say he paid up for the shtar. So he left out any mention of shtar. The witnesses say he sees it giving money that he's paying back a loan. Avo pare din bidei l'bidei. If this whole situation revolves around his word and the other person accepts, yes, you did pay me back, and Now, if suppose he would have said, what are you talking about? You never paid me a dime. I've got a shtar, but you just pay me. So he could have said, lo hayu dvarim me'olam. So mi go, diyachol lomar, lo hayu dvarim me'olam, diyachol na mi'olam, sitra'i nina. It's therefore the same nemonis that he would have had to say, lo hayu dvarim me'olam. He's believed to say, yes, you paid me another debt. What does that have to do with this contract? Ukiri avimi, b'rei the Rabbi Abu. In fact, avimi b'rei the Rabbi Abu. And Ksuvis, if you recall, had exactly the same story happen to him, in which he goes ahead and he pays up avei kozoi, and they tie him, yes, you paid, but you didn't pay it on this debt, and over there, that's how we paskin. Since he didn't pay in front of his, they had a migu to say, I don't know what you're talking about, and because of that, we believe they're tiny that it was citroid, you know, same exact question that it was citroid. Now, Ahudi Amal El Chavre, Mehemenat Li Kol Emat Da Amar Li Lo Parana. A guy signs a debt off of somebody in which he accepts that the terms of the loan are such that he will have no legal recourse as long as this person claims that he was never paid. So in other words, if, as Kol Emat Da Amar Li, if you can continue to come to me and say you didn't pay, I will pay him. All right? So, Ozal Pari Bapisadi goes ahead and he pays him in front of witnesses. Abayev Rava Dame Tarvayu. Abayev Rava said, what good are witnesses? I am nay. He said, I have no legal recourse. And essentially, I'm mochel every tviyah that you will make against me, I will pay you for. That's what the guy said. He wants to be an idiot, so. But that's what he did. Maski Flor of Papa says, Rav Papa, now wait a minute. You have to understand the meaning of the words, I will believe you and pay you. I mean, what he's saying is, I will believe you more than it would be a question of my word against yours. That's all that he's saying. That if we have any argument, I claim we paid, you claim you didn't pay, then your word is the one that counts. That's all he's saying. I mean, what does he mean? He means, I believe you more than objective witnesses. I mean, why in the world would we interpret it this way? Did he believe him more than he believed witnesses? Everything has to be taken in context. There was another maaser where somebody took out a loan and said to him, you are believed to me mamish like witnesses, like two witnesses. And any time that you say I didn't pay, then it's as if witnesses come and testify I didn't pay. He goes ahead and he pays him in front of three witnesses. Now, he only said that this guy believes like two witnesses. So Rav Papa said, well, he only said kibay trey. He never said kibay tlata. So this guy's pretty smart. And he actually got out of his own tonight by paying him up in front of three witnesses. Omelie Ravuna Breda Rav Yeshua Rav Papa. Now wait a second over here. The number of people testifying, when the words, I believe you like two witnesses, never means I believe you like two witnesses, as opposed to three witnesses, because technically speaking, it doesn't matter how many witnesses you've got. Witnesses times anything are still two witnesses. That's what it means. So if you've got 100 people on one side and two people on the other side, it's exactly the same nemanut. So where in the world does he come off saying, well, but I said two, and this is three, and that's absurd. Yes, there are cases in which it does indeed make a difference how many people are there. But that has to do with issues of judgment. For instance, let's say in cases where you need to estimate the value of something for purposes of mekach u'memkar in court, right? And over there, if indeed you've got more people on one side that give you another estimate of professionals, and so far, then you say, kama d'nefishi, the key today. I mean, the more experts you have on a thing, and the more reasonable it is to rely on that estimation. Are you talking about an assessment? Avalainyan edut, he said, I'm taking this as testimony. And when it comes to testimony, me'akitrei, betray kamea, it's all the same thing. So it was cute, but meaningless to pay him back in front of three. Lishna Akurina. Ahudiyom, another way of saying this was Ahudiyom lelachadre, mehemnat li kibetrei. You are believed kibetrei, kol ema zamed lo parana. Whenever you say you weren't paid, same as we had, ozal upari ba'ape tlata, and he goes ahead and he pays him in front of three. And Rav Papa said, kibetrei himne, kibetlata lo himne, and this was the case we had. And in this version, Maskev for Ravuna Breda Rav Yehoshua, what? Isn't Trey Kameo Mea Ketrey? How could you be that? How could you say that there's an Afkamina? The Omar Leke Beit Lata. Now, I would agree with you. If you would have said, I believe you like three. Oh, so then there's no meaning to say such a thing, I believe you like three. If he says, I believe you like three, and he goes ahead and he pays him up the front of four, then even the Nachit Levdeot, Nachit Levdeot, then obviously he wasn't talking about witnesses. He's talking about people. So in other words, you are the equivalent of three people that would testify otherwise. If I can bring you four people who will say that I did pay, then already, I mean, there's got to be some level that I can prove I paid you at. You say you don't trust anybody. Okay, fine. I'll go along with you. Don't trust anybody. If I bring three people, I think you don't trust them. But beyond that already, we're getting ridiculous. So if I bring you four people, are we okay? Let me in front of four people.
You change this condition on the contract because you believe it's like contract.
This is a very interesting issue, which actually Chazanish has a big piece on. He relates it to the elements in the Mishnah about Neman Alai Abba or Neman Alai Shlosha Roy. So in other words, how do those kind of commitments work? Where a person accepts on him the judgment or the testimony of people that normally wouldn't be accepted. What's the mechanism of it? Is it a tnayim momen? Is it a din in actual arbitration? There's a lot of discussion about it. It's a very good point, and it's by no means clear how somebody could stam make an arrangement like this. Now, we said, so the Mishnah starts off very reasonably that a taina of a chereshot of a katan, or a katan who is in a position of needing to be mishpa, in neither case is there a din of a shvua. My taina, Omar krat yitain ish areyeo ketzev okelim mishmo, the in nitinat katan klum. That means that the halacha ki yitain ish areyeo is, which is of course the source of the entire issue of moda benitza, because that's where they come to court. Vasher yomar ki huzeh, and that's where our pasuk is coming from. The parshas Hashomrim, although I mentioned to you that's a machlokas Rishonim, Lagabi the din of Iru Parshas Yeshkan, whether it's exactly the same when it comes to Shvaz Hashomrim or whether it's only comes to moda benitza. But in any event, the sugya of Nishbayin is based on the opening pasuk of when a man gives. And since there's no such thing over here when it comes to a katan as introducing the whole sugya of Ki Yitein Ish, that means that the Torah was never mechayev in such transactions, the normal interactions that such transactions are mechayev. Aval Nishbayin lekatan v'lahegdesh. But you do take a shvua to cotton. What does that supposed to mean? You just said that you're not nishva on a taina chereshot to the cotton. And then you turn around and you say, but you do swear to the cotton. Now how do you swear to the cotton if the cotton isn't being towing you? What does that mean? Omarav says, Rav, what that means is that when someone is bab ta'anat aviv, remember, the source of the din that you're not, a katan has every legal right of anybody else, right? This we learn out, this we had back in Bava Kama and Bava Metzia. There's no difference. The katan's legal right. The only question is in his chiyuvim. So if he would come now into court to be taina, he could certainly be towing in court. His only problem over your limitation is that the particular set of laws that defines the relationship of loans or shomrim don't function on that level of the requirement of shvua nemanut because of whatever reason. I mean, the confusion that can often happen in a child's head and so on, the willingness that I had in mind when I'm doing a favor for a child, however we'll understand it. But suppose the cousin comes into court and he says, now look, my dad gave you something to watch. Where is it? Now, over there, there's no problem of who gave. In other words, the interaction here was governed by the set of laws of Ki Yitein Ish. The cotton is like anybody else. When he brings suit, he's bringing suit for interactions that were defined by Ki Yitein Ish. In such a case, Nishboin LaCotton. So there's no reason why we can't have to swear to the cotton. The only question is that we need to be included in the chiyuv of swearing. Yeah, the bezin normally would be tiny for a katan. I wouldn't say normally, but for Yisrael, maybe it would be tiny. But it's not the tiny that's the problem. It's whether the law applies to the original Mesiras HaChefet. Even if we're all agreed, yes, it did take place, he was a shomer, that's not the question. Is there a chiyuv of shvua? The Torah wasn't neiter a ksuva on such a person. Mashenkin, over here, the father gave it. The father gave it, it's fine.
But if a katan is
court and give something to him, although he has no recourse.
He has recourse, but not the recourse of Shua. He has recourse with Adim, his recourse with you know, whatever the guy is willing to be mowed on, and so on and so forth. Now, of course, Lamaisa, in the same way that we put a Chiyav, there's the Nishboyim of the Rabbonan, in such cases, as we know, we added very special recourse to Katan in terms of somebody wants to collect from a Katan. We'll see some actually learn that that's what the Mishnah is referring to, which is an inversion of the process. But on the contrary, it's talking about the protection of a Katan. So it's talking about the Tainas of Eve, and it's going according to Rabbi Yezeb and Yaakov. The Tainas of Rabbi Yezeb and Yaakov Omer, Pa'amim Shadam Nishbal Ta'anatatzma. You know, it can happen that a guy could swear on his Taina against himself. What does that mean? Amarno, if a guy says to a child, you know, your dad before he died gave me $100 as a loan. And I only got a chance to, you know, I was supposed to use it for buying things for him. Half of it I actually used for his benefit and so on. The other half I didn't use. No, in such a case, I raised a nishba. He'd have to swear. It's like a motor b'miksa. And he's being nishba, not that small. What are you talking about? He's like a meshiva veda. I mean, he's doing you a favor. He's telling you, he owes you money, and now you're going to make him swear on the fact that he tells you that he owes you money. Now here, we actually mentioned to you earlier, we talked about in the mission this issue where we had the Kameshiv Aveda before. The truth is, there's a very interesting machlokas we're showing him here. Rashi learns that Kameshiv Aveda means that Chazal patered a Meshiv Aveda. And that's the Good Samaritan law. Otherwise, if somebody's going to come along, now clearly in cases where there's a tviyah, you need to have the Tur Darabonah, meaning, you give the guy back his wallet. The guy said, wait a minute. There was $100 in a wallet. Now there's only 50. What happened to the other 50? So in such a case, you have a real tviya. You have the wallet, and you're giving me back less than the money that's there. I don't care if it came into your hands as an abater, it came into your hands as a pikadon that I gave you. Where's my money? So that's a classic motive of mixes atayna. Well, there was 50. That's all. I mean, there wasn't another 100. Okay, so there you would be chayiv, except for the fact that the Torah said to you, that the Rabbanan said to you, that we have good Samaritan laws. Otherwise, there are people going to say, what do I need to get into the Torah? So you forget it. I heard what happened to Joe when he made the stupid mistake of bringing in an Aveda to court. So therefore, okay, so we make that takana. But where there would be no tviya, then certainly in a case like this, we have a straightforward Migo. He could have simply shut up. Right? What does he have to say? Your father gave you money. He doesn't have to say anything. And he could even give the kid a gift if he's feeling that. But he doesn't have to start the whole procedure. So in such a Tosis time, we don't need here the issue of any type of takona that you're not nishban and aveda. It's a simple, straightforward migo. And in this case, Rav says it's talking about Amar Rav b'shetano katan. It's talking about that the katan is demanding the money. And that's why it's not Kameshav Aveda. You can't say Kameshav Aveda. He has to answer the time of the cotton. What? Time of a cotton? Aren't we going around in a circle? Katan. I'm a Danish boy now. Time of Chere Shad of a Katan. Didn't you just say in the Mishnah that you don't take a Shvua on a Tanat Katan? And now you're saying that, well, no, that's the whole point over here. The cotton was toying. Well, no. We don't really mean a cotton. We mean he's a Godel. Leolam is a gadol, but we call him a katan, and we call him a katan because that is the point over here. My korele katan de legabe mile de avu katanhu. For all intents and purposes, he's a katan in terms of his ignorance. In other words, a child doesn't know what he's talking about, and a son who is not part of his father's financial activities has no idea what was going on. Like, Dad gave you. What was that supposed to mean? You know whether I paid him back. You know whether he owed me money. God knows how much money he owed me. You know whether we were partners in some kind of investments, whether we were drug dealers together. What do you know? You don't know anything. You come along and say, you saw Dad give me. So that's considered to be basically the equivalent of a tiniest cotton. You're telling me now. I mean, listen to this. Rabbi Ezra ben Yaakov comes along and says, you know, sometimes a guy can be nishba on his own statement. So we say, well, it actually means it's a cotton in the background. Well, he's not really a cotton. He's actually a guttle in the background. So, I mean, what now is the meaning to a statement? Sometimes the person swears on his own words. He's not swearing on his own words. All you're telling me is that even though somebody, you could say, may be ignorant about his father's affairs, but you have to swear anyway. I mean, what's this dramatic statement that sometimes a person swears because of his own statement? That can't be what he meant. Well, it says the Gemara. I mean, it's not Tanat Atzmo.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's true, it's Ta'anat Acherim, but it's his own Hoda'ah, he didn't have to admit anything. What? Every case in Motiv Anixis, for God's sake, is a Ta'anat Acherim, Hoda'at Atzmoninu. What are we doing here? We're trivializing the whole statement of Rebbe Eliezer. Therefore, the point over here actually is Bidaraba Kamiflag. Let's get back to what we said before. And this is the point that Rav is making here in the Mishnah. Of course it means Kishatoano Katan. The Taina comes from a Katan. The question over here, is it covered by the laws of Kiyitain Ish? Yes, in a case where the Katan is tining that the father gave it. So in terms of coming out of a netinat ha'av, that is essentially what we said over here in the Mishnah. This is the Rav in the Mishnah. That's mefarish it this way. Now, why is there a machlokas about this? Because the question is how to understand the din amod of a mikzas. That's the question. Not whether this is included under ki yiten ish, but whether a taina of a katan based on a ki yiten ish. And over here, it really doesn't matter to me whether it's katan or gadol. A taina against someone who you never had any business with, and the guy has no sense of shame in front of you. Does the din or motive make this apply? And what we're arguing about are the psychological bases for the din of motive mikzas. And that's Rava. The Omar Rava, Mipnei ma amra Torah modeh b'mikzata ta'ana yishava. Now, in this case, we're not darshaning time at a crow. We need to understand where the Torah was utilizing motiv mikzas and for what purposes, because it's going to make a tremendous afkamina halacha. Here is an example of where it will make an afkamina halacha, in which it's essential for us to understand the thinking that's going on behind the scenes. Because it is a very strange thing. I mean, if the guy wants to lie, why doesn't he lie? Doesn't it strike you that he should be certainly less needing to swear if he's moda partially, in which he's shown himself to be honest, than if he simply denies the whole thing? So what's the basis of this? The basis is an understanding of human psychology, in that essentially, chazakah ein adam me'iz panav b'fnei ba'al chovo. We can proceed on the assumption that somebody who lends you money, it's very difficult for you to say straight to his face, it never happened. And therefore, hi, b'kulei boi delich for it. He really, if he was not going to pay, he would have just said, I'm not going to pay anything. But hi, de lo kafre, he can't say that. In which case, once he's already unwilling to lie about it, why isn't he just admitting it? Well, because the kulei boi deludele, he would have admitted it if he could have afforded it. He says to himself, I'll pay him back one day, but not today. I don't have the money today. So I'll just be as honest as I can afford to be. And in such a case, the Torah says, okay, Rami Shvua Aliyah, let's make life a little bit tougher and turn up the pressure so that he doesn't make that little twist in his mind, which of course will end up, and of course he'll never pay anyway. And this way we'll get all the out of him. Now the question is, how does that apply to a case where the son is the one that's doing the tviyah, not the person who actually gave him the money? So Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Savar, lo shna bo, velo shna bivno, it doesn't matter. The person is not, doesn't matter if it's his son, even though he doesn't know the son, he's not going to tell the son it never happened. And therefore, he's not considered to be a meshiva aveda, covered by the Good Samaritan rules, and he doesn't have to pay. He's like anybody else. Whereas the Rabbanan Savre, bifanav huda eno me'iz, alba bifnevano me'iz. The Rabbanan say, look, he could easily have said, never happened. Umidalo me'iz. Now since he didn't say that, that is the classic basis of belief called amigo, in which he's a meshiv avedahu, and in the case of ashavat avedahu, we never will force the person to swear. And that's the meaning of the Mishnah. Now wait, this can't be the meaning of the Mishnah. How can you say it's going according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov? The whole Mishnah begins, if you recall, with this part of the Mishnah begins with, in the Reisha, Mona la Abba biyadeh, ein lecha biyadeh lecha mishim dinar, patur mipnei kemeshiv avedah. The Mishnah says b'seirush, that it is a meshiv avedah. The same case. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, the whole point Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov makes is that it's not called kemeshiv avedah because a person has the same limits in his psychology of lying to the man's son that he would about lying to the guy. So does the Mishnah start off by saying, can we first throw out Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Shita, and now let's discuss what the din is in Nishpor and Altayin has caused? And you're trying to use Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov to explain where we would be nishbar pinas katan. That's absurd. The Mishnah is not following that logic at all. Answers the Gemara. Now, not necessarily. Because hatam de lo amar borili. How do you know that? Maybe the resha is that the child is saying, I think my father lent you money once. Well, you think, boy, but it never happened. Yeah, that's okay. The case in which we were talking about, Rabbi Yisrael Yaakov, is where the boy says, I know dad lent you money. I saw it. Okay, so over there he's coming with a bori. Over there it says, Rabbi Yisrael Yaakov, he won't be mazed. Shmuel Amar. Shmuel says, you know something, you're so caught up in the way that the Mishnah used the concept of a shvua, namely that it was the shvua of the person who was the nidba now, who's got to swear to the Toveya, that you take it for granted that that's what it means when it says, we will be nishba to a kotan. So I've been talking about that. You know what the Mishnah means when it says you won't be taking shvua to a nishboim, avon nishboim lekotan? Completely different issue. It means if somebody's coming to collect from a kotan, then he has to swear. If somebody's coming to collect from Hegdash, then he has to swear. That's what it means. That's absolutely nothing to do. It's just to make it very clear that even though I just got finished saying that ein nishboim al ta'anat katan, that doesn't mean that ein nishboim al katan. On the contrary, we protect the katan so that even though you have every reason to collect from him, and we have no reason to be b'chayav you a shvua, but exactly as Yossi pointed out, we will be towing essentially for the katan and force you to make a shvua if you want to collect from him. That's what it means. Same thing is true if you want to collect from Hegdesh. Let's say somebody had been magdish as nechassin, and somebody else comes along and says, wait a minute. That was actually mine. I had a lien on that. Well, how can you take that property? Hegdesh was my property. So what we're choshesh is that, of course, they made a little deal between them, and the guy says, listen, why don't I give you a shtar, and you go, I don't have any other money, you go collect it from Hegdesh. I'm so sorry, I gave that away, I need it desperately. We'll split it. So if you want to collect from Hegdesh, you have to swear that indeed the shtar that you're coming to collect with is a kosher debt. And that's what the Mishnah is talking about, nothing to do with the Nidvah, it's the Toveya, says the Gemara. So then, wait a second, that can't be the meaning of the Mishnah, because Tanina, we know that from other Mishnayos. Why would we need to have it twice? The Mishnah says beferish, minichsei yitomim lo yipara ala bishvua. If you're coming to collect from minichsei yitomim, you can only collect with a shvua. Well-known principle in a Mishnah. I need two Mishnayos normally before. Because there's a chiddush here. Hakamashkon tirabaya kishisha. This teaches me what Abaya Kishisha said. When we say that you have to swear to a yatom, you might have thought that that means only to poor little minor orphans. We're talking about Gilbert and Sullivan orphans, right? The guy's 80 years old and he tells the pirates, but I'm an orphan, you can't do this to me. And that's what we're talking about. When we're nishboyin, it's not because they're poor little orphans. It's because of the fact that we need to protect people who are unfamiliar with the details. That's the point. So yitomim shamru gitolim, vein tzarichu maktanim avyet ktanim. But suppose we would only have had one Mishnah, we would have said, okay, from this Mishnah, most you see is that your Mishnah nichsa yitomim, meaning, of course, yitomim ktanim comes along now, this Mishnah, to add, even yitomim gitolim. That's why I mentioned it twice. Vein tzarichu maktanim. Bein l'shvua, whether it comes to the halacha that you're mechuyev to take a shvua before collecting. Bein l'ziburit, the halacha is when you collect from nichsei yitomim. Normally, of course, there are times you could collect from beinanis as a balchov, or if you have other tzviot, a zikah and so on, you could collect from edit. When you're collecting from yitomim, you're limited to his worst property. And what about lehegdish? You're saying lehegdish is li parami nichsei hegdish? That's a beferish of Mishnah. Why would our Mishnah repeat the din that if you're going to come to collect from hegdish, you have to swear? It happens to be a general rule that minachasim mishur, but even if it's not a hegdish, if you come to collect from a field that somebody else now owns, and you're collecting on the base of a pre-existing lien to this guy's purchase, you're also going to have to swear, because we're always afraid in such cases that the two of you made a deal, the person supplies you with a contract to enable you to sue, you sue and collect a non-existent lien which is backed by a contract with a forgery, essentially, and then you split the proceeds of his recovering your field, his field, from the guy that he sold it to, And meanwhile, he claims poverty and he can't pay the guy back for the money that he took for the field. Great deal. So anyway, you have to swear. So if that's the case, why repeat you have to swear by Hegdish? It's not going to be worse than needing to swear for Nechasim Meshubadim in general. And it says, Ein Nifraim Nechasim Meshubadim Ela Bishvuah. Now, what do I care if it's Meshubadim Lehedyot or if it's Meshubadim Legavoah? I mean, it belongs here to Hegdish, so why shouldn't you swear? No, I need that, you see. Because it's Chsakada Atech Amina. I might have thought that, okay, I mean, against a fellow man, we certainly are going to make a deal to screw him. But I mean, to go against him, to go fight God and to try to get a field away from Hegdish, I mean, that's like taking money out of the collection box, you know. You got to be really low to do that. Well, Hegdish, maybe I would say, Ein Adam Osek Kenunya al Hegdish. You don't make a scheme to collect illegally from Hegdish, Kamash Malan, that you do indeed, and therefore we make you take a shvuah before collecting. It's not a shvua on the carcass, it's a shvua on the
loan.
Yeah, it's not on the yeah, of course it's, I mean, that's how we're collecting them here.
But is this a general statement that you don't suspect people on Hegdish, or you might not have thought you suspect them on Hegdish?
You might have thought.
I'm talking about the opinion that you might have thought, but surely, is it relative term?
People that
say Hegdish wouldn't do shvua.
Yes, correct. In other words, that's in general, you can always ask that question. If we suspect somebody of dishonesty, then why, what's the point of a shvua? You could always be dishonest about
Hegdish, because it's dishonesty with respect to God. Whereas the Shavuot is also dishonesty.
Right. Because we always differentiate, people's minds differentiate between monetary issues, which are always a little bit loose, you know, in which we can find a basis for, you know, I need it more. Hegdish is really supposed to be taking care of the poor and all that type of thing. Now, says the Gemara, but isn't it true that people don't make a kenunya on Hegdish? Because, and Ravuna says that a shchiv mirash Hegdish kol nechasav. This guy is dying. He gives away all of his property to Hegdish. And then he says, oh, you know, by the way, mana leploni biyadi, I owe $100 to so-and-so, make sure that he gets his money, that he's then ne'aman, because chazakayin adam osek kenunya on Hegdish. We don't think for a moment that he's trying now, he's pulling back, trying to recover some of that, and really he doesn't owe $100 from before to somebody. Well, you know, there's no atheist in the foxhole, is basically what's happening over here. I mean, I need a shvim mira. What's the guy now? He's dying. I mean, so what's he going to now? He's going to be chote so that other people can get the money out of Hegdish. What's he going to get out of that? A little bit of extra help? What's in it for him? Avo gabe bori. If you're talking about a bori, there's always something in it for you. And vada kashina. In that case, we would in fact make him swear. The elo devarim she'in nishpa'in aliyah. Now the following things, because of what they are excluded from the chiyuv of the shvua of the modeh b'miktzas, and also of the other elements that are included, such as the din toin tanis ganav, you'll remember, which is the source of the dinim of the shvuas hashomer, also is the source of the dinim of kefil and tashlumi dalavei. It's all basically in the same parsha. So the things that you're not nishpa are avadim, shtarot, karkaot, vehekdeshot. And we already saw, we learned this out of the limud, we made a klal prado klal, and we excluded anything that's not gufo mamon, and that's not metazoli. And because of that, there's also no chiev of kefil, and on anything that is not gufo mamon is not metazoli. And there's no din of tashlumi arba avachamisha. Once there's no kefil, then if an animal, let's say, would be owned by Hegdish, there wouldn't be a din either of Teshlumi Arba V'Chamisha, because the Torah only said four or five times. But if you exclude the kefil from that, you're down to three or four times, and there's no din of three or four Teshlumi in the Torah. Shomer Chinam Eino Nishban. In such a case, the Shomer Chinam is not mechuyav to take a shvuah to patur himself. The Nosei Sakar Eino Mishalem. And the Nosei Sakar, who would normally be responsible for it, is not included in the parsha of Ki Yitein Ish Rehu Kesev O Kelim, and so on, or Al Kol Dvar Pesha, where we list Al Shor, Al Se, and so on. They're all things that limit through the Klal Prado Klal. Rabbi Shimon says, well, wait, it's not as simple as all that. Because the truth is that there are two elements, really, in something that is Hegdish, isn't there? Because let's say that somebody is watching a carbon for someone else. Well, this guy was going to bring his carbon oila, He's going to go up to Yerushalayim next week. He says, do me a favor, take care of my Korban Olah. Then he was already Madbit, right? So now you're going to say, well, something happened to it, I'm sorry, and I don't have to swear because after all, it belongs to Hegdash. But now hold on a second. If this guy doesn't have his Olah, and he said Hari Alai Olah, he's going to have to bring another Olah, isn't that right? Now that's called a Dabar Hagorim Lamamon. To him, essentially, it's worth money, straight on money. Because he's going to have to take another $100 out of his pocket to buy another Ola. And if he gets it back, he saves that $100. That's money. So you're swearing L'Re'ehu. But that's the base of not swearing to Hezbech. Because it says L'Re'ehu. Itanish L'Re'ehu. That's not Hezbech. Fine, but there is a Re'ehu here in that part of it which represents the value that it would be to him. And therefore it would depend. If he said Hare Alai Ola, so then it's Chayav Bachrayutan. When a person says Allah, he's taking it upon his shoulders. It's on me. If he said Harezo, then he's not responsible. If something happens, it's not my problem. I said, this should be an Ola. I don't have it. I don't have it. So, yes, if he said Harezo, then you're right. Then there's no, he doesn't lose anything. Hegdash is the only party that suffers. And the Torah says none of these laws apply to Hegdash. But in a case where he too suffers because he said Harezo, then this represents money to him. And therefore, you'd have to swear to him about his part of the deal. Then for sure it's a Dabar Agorim L'Mamon. Yeah. Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir says there's a further extension of this issue. Yesh Dvarim Shein Kekarka. I know that you figure that when we talk about karka, what we mean is anything that is attached to the ground. But that's not necessarily true. There's some things that look like real estate on the surface. But mitzad hadin are not like karka. And the Chachomim are not moded to him about this. Now, what am I referring to? Ketzad? Eser gefanim tu unot masarti l'cha. A guy says, look, you know, I gave you over my vineyard, take care of it, had 10 vines full of grapes. And the guy says, no, there were 5. So Rabbi Meir says, even though those vines full of grapes are attached to the ground, the grapes themselves, and we'll see in the Gemara, it's talking about the grapes are fully ripened and now need to be taken off the vine. So Rabbi Meir says, then those grapes, the fact that their physical connection to the earth is not the issue. We don't view them as real estate because they're only mivatzer. And therefore, they're as if they're bitzurot. The Chachamim say, no, it's the reality of the physical status at that time. If it's mekuvel l'karka, then it has a din of karka. Ein nishba'in, and furthermore, we have another caveat about the din of modu b'mitzah. The thing that you're swearing about cannot be approximate for it. In other words, it's only going to be if somebody is talking about a thing that has a particular midah, measured in a particular way, or it has a particular weight, or a particular number, then you can argue about it. But if a guy says, hey, you know, I get the whole building was full of wheat. Now look at it. Well, you know, look, man, I don't know what you're talking about. This is the whole building. Or, this wallet was full of coins. I don't see anything like what I gave you. That's not considered to be. The other guy says, I have no idea what you're talking about. Any idea. Mashi nachatanotel. Look, this is what you gave me. Just take it. I didn't count it. You didn't count it. In such a case, the Torah never said it. That's modu mitzvah zatayna. But, I mean, that doesn't mean it has to be a universally recognized measurement. And let's say that the guy says, now, hold on a second. The grain was right up to that shelf in this aisle. And the other guy says, no, it wasn't. It was up to the windowsill. So then, they are arguing out about a dover shemaminyan. So in that case, it's a min shebenida, and in that case, if he says zel merad aziz, but zel merad halon, then he would be chayav, even though we may not know exactly how many bushels that represents. But it's a large container, with midot on it, and that too is mechayav ishvua. Right? So we're going to stop. Are we ready to continue? It's only been 47 minutes. It's not every day that we have Yossi Stern here. I don't know if you, Barnea, Pompanea, you recognize that? Yeah, a lot happens in a quarter of a century, I think. Or more even, I mean. 30 years already? Oh my gosh, it's a long time not to come to see you. I'll tell you, if Tender would find out about this, you'd have your head. Says the Gemara. Tashlume Kefel. No, no, wait a minute. They're going to start walking out on me. I'm going to... Tashlume kefel. Minolan. How do we know that the Torah does not mechayev tashlume kefel on these things that you said are Shtaras, Karkos, Hekdeshas, where do we get that from? The Tana Rabbanan, we analyze the pasuk. I'll call Dvar Pesha, I'll Shor, I'll Chamor, I'll Seh, I'll Shah, I'll call Aveda, and this is where it says, Asher Yomar Ki Huzeh. This, of course, is the mucker of our whole parsha. So we dash it like this. I'll call Dvar Pesha as a cloud. I'll Shor, I'll Chamor, I'll Seh, I'll Salma. That's all a prop. Then it says, I'll call Aveda, Asher Yomar Ki Huzeh. It's a cloud, because I have a cloud. Klau prat uklau, iatadan erakena prat, ma prat mifurash, davar mitatel begufo mamon. As we've said many times before, it has to be chattel, it has to be movable, and it has to have intrinsic value. Afko, davar mitatel begufo mamon. Yatsu karkaot, real estate, cannot be moved. The same, it says, not mitatel. And yatsu avadim, that's because of technicality, that the Torah views avadim as real estate, because the hukash le karkaot, through the Nachatem of Nechem, like Nachala, like Sada, and Yatsu Shtarot, Shabbat Bishem Metatalim, yes, they're easily movable, but they have no intrinsic value. En Gufam Mamon. As far as the exclusion of the Hegdesh, that's simply because it says at the end of the Pasuk, Asher Yashiyun Elohim, Yishalem Shnaim L'Re'eu. You only pay any of the above to your friend. And the ownership of Gavoa is certainly not your friend in law. And therefore, surprisingly, they're less well protected because they don't come under the set of dinim that protect, I mean, there's other opinions, we'll see the Mishnahs, but they don't come under the dinim of protection. And, so there's no din of Kepo, no din of Dal Vahey, no din of Shvua.
But there are other dinim that will affect it, right?
Yeah, there are the normal monetary dinim. And then, of course, you have Me'ilah, which are not civil. Well, they're Isveheter issues, right? Involve Isveheter, Asham, Tashem, things like that. Gentlemen, Shabbat Shalom and Mubarak. And we'll see you once again at 7:45. We're still okay up there.
But you have an envelope here for paying for registration.
Do you want to
ask
next week? I don't want to do it on site.
I wish you all well and support.